Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Neil Kulong and the Steelers in a few moments. Doug Kazarian in the final half hour. Dan Dierdorf and Jim Brandstetter tomorrow. First, our play-by-play call of the day. You tell me how this ball got out of the yard. Here's John Sterling.
Swung on and lined a deep right field. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. It's a three-run home run. He is the Todd Father. A three-run blast in the right field seats. In Todd we trust. A three-run blast, and the Yankees take a 3-0 lead.
Well, John Sterling certainly makes it colorful, because later on there was another Judgian blast, and that was by, obviously, Aaron Judge, who also hit home run last night. How that ball got out, because it looked like he was just taking a pitch low and away and slapping it to right field for a base hit, maybe to drive in a run from second. And the ball kept going and it got out. I couldn't believe it when I saw it.
Yeah, later on in the game, Tom Verducci was talking about how he plants his back foot with his swing. Like he tilts his foot off to the side.
Yeah.
But that was kind of unique. You don't see that too much.
No, you don't. But you know what? The thing got out of there last night. That was amazing. That was some home run. Like I said, in all the years I've never seen somebody it looked like he was slapping the ball to right field. All right. Let's bring in Neil Kulong now, USA Today. Time to talk about the Steelers. One thing about him, he brings an availability to the table. He's always here for us. We never have to worry that he's going to be here because Neil's always here and also a lot of knowledge. So, Neil, I always appreciate that part very, very much.
Yeah, that's probably more the latter than the former, but the former is certainly true. My availability is my strongest characteristic.
That's what I always tell everybody. I can do that. All right. Neil, are the Pittsburgh Steelers emblematic of 2017 National Football League football because they played down one week and up the next?
I don't have any idea what 2017 NFL football is.
That's true.
Whatever it is, the Steelers could be it, and they might not be it either. There's just so many weird things that are going on with this team. Their record, I think, and the level of play that they've shown really kind of reflects the drama that's going on. And the best part of it is you have the players week in and week out that are blaming the media for that. It's like, do you not want us to look at the train wreck on the side of the road? I mean, how are we not going to?
Right.
Not that these things are necessarily big deals, but there's certainly something to talk about. I mean, you can't expect people to not discuss Antonio Brown throwing a Gatorade cooler on the sideline. Does it mean that all is wrong in the kingdom of Steeler Nation? No, it just at the same time, it's like, wow, look at him kind of freak out there. That's not something you see every day.
Mm-hmm.
If Martavis Bryant did, in fact, in some way, shape, or form, request a trade or, you know, begin the discussion with his agents about a trade, whatever it is, I think it's fair to assume that something did happen with it, and you can understand why that might be the case. This offseason, you know, a little bit of a kind of a quasi back and forth with Ben Roethlisberger over, you know, his placement on the team. He hasn't gotten the ball a whole lot. Ben's missed a couple throws to him deep. He doesn't really seem to feel valued by the team as much as perhaps he'd like to. In other words, he's an NFL wide receiver, and in his position, he might have just been frustrated. I don't think that it's unreasonable for him to have that kind of reaction. Obviously, nothing ever happened. I'm sure stuff like that happens a lot. I don't think all these things are all that big of a deal, but they seem to be coming from everywhere,
right.
And that's not something I think we're used to.
Is this just a question, Neil? I mean, you and I both know matchups mean everything in a game. It doesn't get talked often enough, but is just a case where the Steelers really match up well with Kansas City?
They must. They must. You hit the nail on the head. This really is just a matchup game. I think Kansas City is an excellent football team in many ways, but the sum of their parts is more than the sum of the Steelers' parts. I think they have a lot of talent on both sides of the ball. They're a well-coached team. They play well on special teams. For whatever reason, their offense just could not do anything against the Steelers. I thought the Steelers' defensive line really dominated up front, which has been very much hand-in-hand with the success they've had this season. I think their defense has really been the force that's kind of kept everything together at this point in the season. They played a very good football game. They were not penalized very often, which is something that happened to them against Chicago. They only turned the ball over once, which was really the main problem against Jacksonville and against Chicago. In those losses, they really in many ways beat themselves. It wasn't the opponent as much doing stuff to them that they couldn't prevent as it was Roethlisberger just not being on target, not making good reads. We didn't see that as much against Kansas City. I thought he played a much better game, a sharper game. Obviously, the interception wasn't really on him, and you see offensive interceptions like that. Brown just read something differently than what Ben did. You're going to see that here and there throughout the year, but Brown's the type of guy that's going to make up for it late in the game. The play that he made, I'm not sure we've seen even him make plays like that very often. That was probably Ben's biggest mistake of the game. I'm not sure why he threw that the way he did, but right. Brown kind of justifies it at the end. The Steelers are, I think that the loss against Jacksonville, if anything, woke them up. So you can see why they're going to put a much better performance the next week. People oftentimes view this game in a vacuum, whereas in reality, this is a living, breathing, fluid thing. Week to week, you're going to learn, you're going to gain, you're going to subtract. All of those things with the goal in mind of bettering your team for the next week. And I think more than anything, that's really what the Steelers did. They played a much better game against a better opponent and came out with a win, whereas the previous week, they didn't play very well at all against a reasonable opponent, but not a great opponent. And walked away with the loss.
We know that Le'Veon Bell did not participate in training camp, so his training camp has been week to week getting ready for games. Are we finally starting to see him settle into a guy that now has had weeks of practice and some games behind him?
I thought Mike Tomlin made a good comment today at his press conference. He said that there are consequences to missing training camp, and people always look at it like, well, he's not going to get the carries or anything like that. It's not getting the carries. It's he isn't going to touch the ball during preseason games much. It's more getting that game conditioning in and earning it along with the other players on the field. If anything, I would say the Steelers' offensive line played considerably better than it has the last couple weeks against a pretty solid front. You had to be very impressed with the way Alejandro Villanueva played, probably his best game of the year. The absence of Ramon Foster certainly doesn't help anything. B.J. Finney, I thought, did a reasonable job for what was asked of him to do. But overall, I thought the line just did a great job. Bell, it looked a lot quicker. He looked a lot more decisive in this game. He kind of let the Chiefs come to him. And you saw that cut that's made him such a valuable player and come a little bit quicker and a little bit more sharp than it has over the last couple of weeks. And he took advantage of what they were giving him. Really, I think he went into the game averaging 3.6 yards a carry, and he was averaging 6.1 at the end of that one. And clearly the MVP for the Steelers in that game. I think he's getting back into that game shape, whereas perhaps the training camp reps, the sweat, the conditioning, the repetition, everything like that, that's what he really didn't have. And now he's got a lot more of that. I think he's among the top three in the NFL in touches so far this year. They've certainly given him the opportunity to catch back up. And now I think we're starting to see the fruits of that.
Reportedly, Martavis Bryant would like to be traded. Are they drawing lots to see which person gets the privilege of driving him to the airport?
That's a good question. I think it was more a situation where he might have expressed something in frustration to his agent, and his agent decides after watching his client not really get the ball at all, to leak reports of him, you know, wanting to be traded, to just kind of, you know, try to circulate talks throughout the league to see if, you know, a team might want, you know, overspend for him and blow the Steelers away with an offer now. That's really what it would take for the Steelers to trade him. You really can't trade a guy that's got, you know, the potential that Brian has with 2 years of a cheap rookie contract left. It's going to take a lot to get him traded. And I think a larger part of that would be more something that Bryant is doing in the locker room as opposed to either getting the ball or not getting the ball on the field. He would have to become an incredible distraction for the team to entertain trade offers at this point in the season. Just keep in mind, it's not like this team really has any receiver depth anyway.
That's right.
A lot of the problem we've seen from them to this point in the year, it just kind of mirrors what we saw last year during their winning streak, except they haven't had outstanding production from Le'Veon Bell week in and week out. That was really the team last year. It was Bell, come hell or high water. If he did well, the team was going to win. Look at that Buffalo game, for example. You know, he dominated that game, and Roethlisberger was terrible. They won a pretty tight game because of Bell. When Bell has done well so far this season, they've won. When he hasn't, they've lost. It's largely because they still don't have a reliable second option in the passing game. Bryant isn't that quite yet for one reason or another. He's not getting the ball a whole lot. Some of that could be put on Ben. Brown is Brown. He's still getting 12 targets a game or whatever it is. Offensively, they need Bryant to step up and earn more targets. They need to make this offense more diversified because, as we saw with the heave and pray that the Roethlisberger put up on 3rd and 9 to Brown, I don't think Brown's going to make that play very often. I would even dare to say if they try it again next week, that's going to get picked off. If it does, it's Chiefs ball with the game, you know, on the line, plenty of time on the clock at midfield. It was a ridiculous throw. There's really no reason why he has to force the ball to Brown all the time. That's why this team really needs somebody to step up and you know, become that dominant second receiver like we think that Brian can do. He's going to have to take that upon himself, and instead of crying about how many times he's getting the ball, he's going to need to force himself open and, you know, figure out a way to contribute to the offense so it has a bit more diversity other than just Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell.
What's interesting is that 4 of the first 6 have been on the road. So that means 6 of the next 10 are at home, starting with Cincinnati. One of the keys always is making sure you have a handle on Green at wide receiver. With that in mind, what have you thought about Artie Burns and how he's played so far, Neil?
You know, I was talking about this with a couple people earlier today. I don't think Burns has been tested. I don't think we know who Artie Burns is right now. But right. I think we're going to find out probably at about 7:30 p.m. Sunday who he is, because he's going to get Green and they're going to get Green the ball. My opinion, Burns made a couple mental errors that I saw watching the game back that there's no doubt in my mind Andy Dalton's going to see. A.J. Green's going to see. They're going to go after him early and often. Any opportunity that they get to get Burns on Green, I think they're going to try to take a shot. Because in reality, Cincinnati is an explosive offensive team, but they're not a very good possession offensive team. They're right. going to make big plays, and they're going to win and lose based on that. And their defense, I think, has done a little bit better of a job than I thought they were going to this season. They've come a pretty long way in the last two games. So they're going to have their defense, you know, put their big boy pads on and play a Bengals-Steelers game. But offensively, they're going to look for every deep opportunity that they can get, because I think they're going to try to exploit Artie Burns, who's gotten very comfortable with the ball really not being thrown at him a whole lot. Burns is certainly not a guy that you should avoid in terms of targeting if you're a quarterback. I think Cincinnati's going to go after him.
Neil, it's always a pleasure. And the fact that you are one of the few that says, all right, no matter what, I'll go on the show. We appreciate that.
Well, I enjoy it every week. I'm looking forward to coming back.
Neil Kulog, USA Today. We'll come back with more of today's show in a moment. Today's show is brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome. Great to have you with us. I heard that Shikellamy Hall of Fame piece. How come the suit's not in the Shikellamy Hall of Fame?
I wonder if there's a committee that's been formed to make that happen.
I would hope so.
Who would lead that?
The committee?
Yeah.
I would suppose the chief would.
Great choice.
V. Dave Ritchie would be the perfect choice. There are very few people more popular, more intelligent than Dave. I mean, DeCourt be another good choice.
That happens. We'd have to get the closest round table to the dais.
I would hope I would have a speaking role. I assume it's a roast, right?
Good friend of mine from college. We had some journalism classes together. He lives now down in Philly. Now, to pay his rent, he's in real estate, but he's a comedian. He's been a comedian for a couple of decades, and he is flat-out funny. I would flip him a couple of 20s to scratch off some jokes for me.
Well, you know, in all honesty, and it's something I'm, I talked to Lou Prado about this. Fran Fischer should be in the National Football Foundation Hall of Fame because, I mean, they put broadcasters in before. And I guess Lou, who worked very hard, by the way, behind the scenes to make people realize Shane Conlon should be in. Now, what's obvious to us sometimes slips through the cracks and isn't obvious to everybody else. And Lou was able to say, look, two-time All-American, national champion. I mean, played big in the biggest games, the whole thing. And Lou helped set Shane Conlon on the path to getting into the National Football Foundation College Hall of Fame. Well, some broadcasters are in there as well, and Lou was starting to work on getting Fran Fischer in. When now, obviously, things hit here, and the train left the tracks. And that's what derailed it. And I don't know if it's possible now at this stage. I mean, it's awfully hard now because Fran's passed. I mean, it would be important, obviously, for his family and for his two sons. But Fran should have been put in. You think of all the legendary voices, you know, over the years. Tony Roberts at Notre Dame. John Ward at Tennessee. Larry Munson at Georgia. Tom Fallon down at Baylor. He was the voice of the Final Four in basketball. He was for years. You'd hear, you know, him do the introductions. He's Baylor's play-by-play guy. Guys like that all are in. Well, Fran's every bit what they are, or what they were. He's every bit what they were. He is to us what those others were to their fan bases. And Fran should have been put in. I mean, it's a different time and a different era now. You know, obviously, radio stations carry the games, and there are people who are very kind, and they always tell you how they turn down the sound and they listen to the game. But there's also a national aspect to it now, too, because obviously the games are on Sirius XM. How about
Ross Tucker? He said, "Yeah, I'm going to be in Green Bay this weekend. I'm going to catch you and Jack on. I'm going to catch you and Jack on Sirius XM while I'm in the hotel." I mean, that's like you said, it's nationwide now.
Right, it's a different era.
Now, which is terrific. Which is terrific.
Yeah, which is. But my point about Fran is I want to really concentrate on him, is that he's from the era where not every game was on TV, where that direct contact between the game and the fan went through him and Jim Tarman, Mickey Bergstein, John Grant, then eventually George Paterno. Now, the second time through, that six-year period with George, okay, I think every game at that point was on TV. I'm pretty sure it was. But the first time through, the first 13 years, because Fran was the play-by-play guy for 19 seasons. And the first 13 happened to be in the era of one, maybe two games a season on TV. Everything else on radio. And he took the great product that Penn State had in the field, with the great players they had in the field, and he translated the excitement of what they were doing to you, the fan, which then got you interested in saying, you know what, I should go to Beaver Stadium and watch this team play. Boy, Fran makes it sound so exciting. Then, of course, he'd host TV quarterbacks, where you finally get a chance to then see what he was talking about the day before, and his ability to talk and relate with the players, you know, Joe as well, but his ability to talk and relate to the players so the fans got a chance to know them better and make them human to them. and relatable to them. He was brilliant at that. And I don't know, I'm going to talk to Lou about this again. I don't know if there's anything that we can do to somehow get Fran his just due, because he deserves, based on everything he did here as a legendary voice, to be in the National Football Foundation.
I put Fran in pioneer status. I mean, when you talk about the early days of the radio network, where, you know, we talk about, you know, Coach's Caravan the last few years, we had the radio network caravan. They would go from town to town to to push the product. I mean, it's just the behind-the-scenes stuff, because they believed in what they were doing and how great it was going to be.
Did I ever tell you the Robin Williams story?
You have to share that with me. I can't remember that one.
I'm going to tell that very quickly. Robin Williams was playing Rec Hall, and this waitress at the Nittany Lion Inn was all excited. She said, "I've been serving Robin Williams all morning at the for breakfast here at the dining room. I've only served one other celebrity before." And the other waitress says, "Oh, who's that?" She says, "Fran Fischer." Great story. Doug Kazarian, next half hour.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, keywords 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. What it is, Sean, it's the Chris Schenkel Award from the National Football Foundation. They have had 23 recipients. Ironically, one of them is not John Ward of Tennessee. At some point, John's got to get there. But here are the people that have received it. And several of them, by the way, been on this show over the years. Frank Beckman, former Michigan play-by-play guy. My respect for Frank is off the charts. I didn't really know Frank that well early in my tenure, whatever. And then all of a sudden, like the last like 10 years that Frank was the play-by-play guy, we got to be really good friends. Heck of a golfer, too. Bob Brooks of Iowa, who just passed away last year. If you didn't like Bob Brooks, you did not like people. He's just one of the nicest people ever. Bob Brooks, in fact, his career went back so far. When Penn State reached the 1954 Final Four in basketball, the route to get there in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight was at Iowa City, and Bob broadcast the games. Ray Christensen of Minnesota, same as Bob Brooks. I loved Ray Christensen. Ray passed away a year ago. They asked me to do a quick clip as a tribute to him last year, and I was more than happy to do it. He was a gentleman in every sense of the word. These are all great broadcasters, too. I'm just talking about them as people. Jack Crystal at Mississippi State. Knew him from a couple games I did down in El Paso during basketball. Bob Curtis of Iowa. Never met him. Gene Deckerhoff, voice of the Seminoles, and also, of course, Tampa Bay. We had Gene on the show last year. Woody Durham of North Carolina. I actually know his son, Wes, much, much better than I know. I've only met Woody a couple times and don't really know him at all. I've only met him. His son, Wes, I think, who's the voice of the Falcons now, and also Fox Sports South, is an awesome announcer. Max Falkenstein from Kansas. Never met him. Long-time football, basketball. Frank Fallon of Baylor, whom I talked about earlier. Frank, a great guy. Met him down at a tournament I did at Baylor. Jack Fleming of West Virginia. And, of course, the Steelers, too, for many years. Dick Galliette from Yale. Never met him, but heard him many times. Great. Jim Hawthorne from LSU. Again, class act. He did a broadcast over 400 games for LSU. Obvious, Bill Hillgrove. In 2007, and that's the one, that's the year Joe Paterno went to the Hall of Fame. Bill Hillgrove got the Chris Schenkel Award. That's where Lou Prado came up with the idea about Fran Fischer. The great, and you know I think the world of, and we will laugh until the early morning hours, Johnny Holiday of Maryland. What a guy, what a broadcaster. Larry Munson of Georgia. Never met him, only have heard him. Colorful. Tony Roberts of Notre Dame. Met Tony several times. Got along fine with him. Bob Robertson of Washington State. Long, long time broadcaster at Washington State. And his counterpart from Seattle, Bob Rondo. voice of the Washington Huskies. Chris Schenkel, the original one, obviously. I never met, you know what, all the time I never met him. Bob Berry of Oklahoma, actually met him in basketball. Joe Starkey of Cal Berkeley, he of the famous 5,000 laterals in the Stanford game. John Teicher of UTEP, he was last year's recipient. And met him in basketball because I did two games down at UTEP back in 1997. And Larry Zimmer at Colorado. I had a lot of interaction with Larry, actually, in the 90s on about a couple of things, a couple of items. Those are the people that are in. Fran belongs with them. I don't know if we somehow make it happen, but I'd love to see it happen. He deserves that. Just an opinion, Sean, just an opinion. But Fran, you know, it's just, you know, he's passed away now, so it's, you know, it's harder, but he deserved that kind of recognition. All right, Doug Kazarian. It's pretty easy to get him on the show because Amanda Gifford Lockwood, who runs ESPN Radio, was in my first class at Penn State, so he's forced to do this.
It's good to be here. I just stopped by Amanda's office. Not there, but I wanted to let her know if you hit the road for State College this weekend.
Well, she could tell you all about it after the 4 years that she spent here distinguished herself very, very well. I want to get to something personal for you first. How tough has the last month been because of all the connections that you had in working in Las Vegas for years?
I'm glad you asked because it was certainly a difficult night. I was up till 3 a.m. texting people, things like that. I had a good friend who, she was hiding behind a tree, and another best friend's younger brother was there with his wife, and just the wall, had to hide behind a wall. One of the cops that was ended up being praised as a hero, saved their lives, basically. Another friend who, he was there with his wife, and they have four kids at home, and he just looked at her and said, you know what? Something feels weird, and his instinct and intuitiveness, they left. So definitely hit home. There's no doubt about that. I appreciate your asking, Steve.
Yeah, it's awfully tough, and unless, you know, when you have connections there, it becomes so personal for people, and I'm glad you're able to fill in some blanks for us. I appreciate that. The job that you do, and give me a week, what it's like in a week for you to prep to discuss the various matchups that you have to discuss during radio game day.
Well, like you know, once you're immersed in something, it's not as difficult as maybe coming from the outside world and dropping out of outer space and trying to play catch-up. So I've always felt like the first few weeks of the college football season are the most difficult. And then once you live every Saturday of college football, by week 4, 5, 6, you can remember like almost every score. Because when your adrenaline is running high, like you know from being on air, the rest of your life. A scenario or situation just because your adrenaline is at an apex when you're on air, so you remember everything. So the key is, this is my third year of College Game Day radio, and I just remember the last few seasons pretty vividly, and there is a sort of memory bank. Now, I'm also have a memory of an elephant. Some people, it's just certain strengths that it fits certain duties. Now, the question is how to present everything to the viewer and the listener. And this week will be on 7 hours, obviously. So we have games all throughout the day. So not only will we be talking about the big matchup there with Penn State and Michigan, but we're talking about other games going on. So I put together notes, I'd say starting from Wednesday on. And, you know, if you're an organized person, which you kind of just learned how to be in this business, as you know, you just sort of sort out your notes ahead of time, and then you have a rundown for the show specific. So it's almost two rundowns, one of all the games and the notes you need for each one, and the other is the actual rundown of the show. But, you know, sorry for the long-winded answer, but, you know, a lot of our listeners can do the job as well. I've always said it's a craft. It's juggling. When you start out juggling, learning how to juggle, you start with two balls, then three balls, then four balls. Right. And by the end of it, you're doing chainsaws that are on fire.
Right.
So that's all it is. And, you know, like I said, jumping in from outer space, difficult, but if you just gradually adjust. It's not that hard.
Yeah, I've always told people it's like when you ask the player the question who's been around for 3 or 4 years, has the game slowed down for you? Well, it's the same thing in our business. It slows down for
right.
you,
right.
and you get it. You had, I thought, maybe the Twitter line of the weekend when you said, why should they bother putting the green line out there for the Washington kicker? Sorry. I don't usually laugh when out loud when I read something like that, but I laughed out loud on that. It was a weekend that had no ranked teams versus other ranked teams, and yet it was one of the wackiest weekends of the year. We always get one or two of these a year. What was your thought process watching it all play out as Friday went to Saturday and suddenly the top 10 teams were losing?
Well, you mentioned my time in Las Vegas. Having lived out there 7 years, worked, covered this stuff, you kind of just know that upsets happen. And especially this time of year, because early in the season, everyone's fresh, and you're getting their best shot in terms of the top teams. And then over the course of time, there's a human nature, there's a human element that look at Clemson. They, for the first time in CS history, they beat three top 15 ranked teams in the month of September.
Yep.
Are you really going to be that up for Syracuse? But you, all of a sudden, because of those games, you have the bullseye on your back, right? And then when you get that bullseye, you're getting everyone else's best shot. And sports, especially football, is a game of energy and emotion. And obviously, the injury to Kelly Bryant was a huge factor, but
right.
if you're getting people's best effort, I mean, look, let's talk about our jobs. You ever had a bad show? You ever just been off? Almost like going into the show, you know it's just not right. So you're not going to have your best show. You just kind of know it. And I think that's what happens in sports. And I always say this about football. It's a round ball with 2 points. You know, you're going to get some weird bounces. And that's going to happen, and it happens.
I have to ask you this. You went to Brown, you got an economics degree.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
What took you to sports? because no offense, Doug, okay, an economics degree from Brown puts you on the fast track to something.
I know. What made me bounce around all throughout the small market television? Well, I always knew I wanted to do it. Even in high school, I was a sports editor at my newspaper.
Right.
And even at age 15, I was writing for the LA Daily News. That was what we call a stringer in the business. So I would go cover high school football games and high school whatever games and then get on a payphone, this is before cell phone, and call in a 3 or 4 paragraph article.
Yep.
And dictate it on a Friday night after being on the sideline and logging every stat. And I loved it. And it was what I wanted to do. So I was a sports editor in my newspaper, wrote for the LA Daily News. They actually paid me money and gas money to do that. And then when I went to Brown, I did the whole campus radio thing to the newspaper. So I knew that's what I wanted to do, but I also wanted to get a liberal arts education, so I didn't want to necessarily go to a journalism school. Right. And I just felt that was the best of both worlds. And I actually played water polo, too. So Brown had a really good program, and I wanted to do it all. And I just felt like I get the experience with internships. But you're right. There were days when I was making $22,000, $18,000. I was wondering, why didn't I just go do finance?
Yeah, because you were staring at the bank account saying, if I were doing finance, I would know what to do with this. Okay, so.
Well, I had 2 paychecks bounce. I always tell them. My first TV, my second TV job,
oh, no.
I had 2 paychecks bounce.
Oh, man.
Good times.
Now that you're on this track right now, you get to go to various marquee games. You get to work the national championship and be around that. What's that been like for you to travel around the country to various spots that normally in a career path you may not have been able to get to?
It's fantastic. First and foremost, anytime you're doing something that feels big, it's cool. You know, in any profession, right? When something is, whether it be the cutting edge in your industry or just feel the magnitude. I feel like that's why we all get into whatever our vocation is. Like, this is what I got into the business. So going somewhere and being on the, lack of a better word, front lines for the company and doing radio and being somewhere on stage, it's just what you live for if you're into this business and you're passionate about what you do. The second part is just the sports fan in me. And the sports fan in me loves this. Now, throughout the course of my career, I've been able to do some cool stuff, gone to Super Bowls, mm-hmm. Bowl games, day in and day out, got some big venues, covered the NBA All-Star Game, all that fun stuff, March Madness. But college football, I am a huge fan. And growing up in L.A., yeah, I went to USC games. I went to UCLA games. I went to the Rose Bowls. But when you get a taste of some of the SEC schools, and now I'm looking forward to my first trip to State College, like, I am fired up. And just to be able to do that and get paid to do that, as we always laugh and pinch ourselves throughout our career, it's really cool. And you just get to experience things. You know, it's like traveling to Rome and getting to go see the Colosseum.
Right.
Same concept. It's a rite of passage for that specific path.
Something that Amanda would tell you, I've told her this a long time ago, you cannot... two things you can't tell people to do in a class. You can't tell them how to get a job, you know, because there's no surefire way, and you can't tell them how to get chemistry with people. You, along with Brad Edwards and Trevor Maddich, have chemistry. How natural is it now in 7 hours of being able to rely instinctively on two other people that you trust?
Well, you kind of figure it out. Anybody who's played sports, especially like a sport like basketball, I mean, they tell me, you know, you got to be a pass-first point guard. My job is to make get them the ball. And I read an in-depth article what LeBron James did when they traded midseason for Kyle Korver. He went and looked at Korver's last, like, 50 shots, and he noticed where he likes the ball. So Korver likes to bring it from down low, whereas J.R. Smith likes it, the pass is near his head.
Right.
So LeBron studied that and figured out where they like it. There's one analyst who I work with, not Brad or Trevor, that will always say the player's name when you ask him a question.
Right.
So if you're asking a question about Saquon Barkley, don't ask him Saquon Barkley, because if you say, hey, what do you think about Saquon Barkley? He'll like, Saquon Barkley's great. Right. Like, and then go off. So you just say, hey, what about that Heisman hopeful in the Penn State backfield? He'll be like, oh, so Saquon Barkley's this. Now, that's a very little thing. But when you want to economize words and things like that, you learn how the mechanics of certain people and what they like, because you want them to have zero filter between their head and their mouth. So you want them free-flowing as an analyst and just observe. And then my job is just to connect the dots and traffic cop the situation. But with that being said, those two guys have been together a lot longer than I have, and they're seamless in and of itself. So sometimes you just stay the heck out of their way.
Right.
And that's important. Like, sometimes the best hosts, you know, look at Ernie Johnson in the NBA, right?
Yeah.
He's not on the forefront. He's such a different style than, like, Bob Costas, maybe, right? Ernie Johnson's great because he lets the other guys be the stars, and he's the host. You know, that doesn't always happen. So sometimes the best hosting is just shutting up.
Doug, an absolute pleasure. Doug Kazarian joining us on the show today, and we will come back and wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
If you want to have a fun day, you have to drive a Hyundai. Sunbury Motors Hyundai is putting other import brands on high alert with their drastic new Hyundai reductions. While other dealers have 2017 accents for $17,140, Sunbury Motors Hyundai has accents starting at $12,890. Compare a Toyota Camry with a 2017 Sonata for $18,965.
And you decide which is the better value.
All new Hyundais come with America's best warranty, a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. Sunbury Motors has 13 Hyundai Tucson's starting at $23,143. Save up to $49.49 on a 2017 Hyundai Santa Fe Sport. Santa Fe Sport start at $25,766. If you want to have a fun day, you have to drive a Hyundai. Brand new Elantras start at $16,680. With these prices, Sunbury Motors Hyundai is putting other import brands on high alert. SMC Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Accent, Sedan, and Santa Fe models with SMC loaner vehicles.
All right, great to have you with us. Our thanks again today to Neil Coolong on the Steelers, Matt Leon on the Eagles, and Doug Kazarian previewing Penn State and Michigan. Tomorrow we'll have Dan Dierdorf and Jim Brandstetter from the Michigan Radio Network, courtesy of IMG. And also tomorrow our high school football previews, Selins Grove, Lewisburg, Milton, and Shikellamy. Thursday, Jack Ham, Derek Williams, Dick Girardi, Rich Scarsella. And Friday, we very well may have both Trevor Maddich and Kirk Herbstreit. I'll get a confirmation on Herbstreit tomorrow. So, but just telling you it's a possibility. You know, it's not a lock. Nothing's a lock. But when I mentioned it to somebody, they didn't say no. Oh, okay. So we'll find out. Hopefully. If it doesn't work, then I apologize. I'll just go a different route. But that's what we have coming up. Oh, and by the way, in the high school preview tomorrow, we'll include the suit. But I felt like I didn't build it up big enough.
Next. Tomorrow.
The suit. Next.
Tomorrow.
When I do the promo, should I say, coming up today, Dan Dierdorf, Jim Brandsetter. The suit. Next. Do it like Dave Revson.
No.
Big Ten Live now. And if you know Dave, okay, when you hear Dave on the show, that's how Dave is all the time. But when he does the now, like, where'd that come from, Dave? First time he did it, like, okay. I mean, Big Ten Network's now 10 years old. We had Dave on the show talking about the 10th year anniversary a few weeks ago. And, you know, here's a guy that's been really the voice of the network all 10 years, and these guys have not worn thin at all. Him, Jerry DiNardo, Howard Griffith, you know, they've done a good job on that network. Really good job. All right, so that's what we have coming up tomorrow. The Yankees are about to play against the Astros in Game 4 at Yankee Stadium after the Yankees won last night with relative ease 8-1. Veterans got the job done last night. Todd Frazier, big three-run homer in the first inning. And CC Sabathia on the mound. Then, you know, so relaxed, a more relaxed Aaron Judge. Made a couple of really nice plays in the field last night that he also homered. Lance McCullers on the mound today for Houston. Sonny Gray for the Yankees. That is just a few minutes away at Yankee Stadium. It's on Fox Sports 1, TBS tonight. Cubs and Dodgers at Wrigley. Yu Darvish for the Dodgers tonight. Kyle Hendrick on the mound tonight for the Chicago Cubs. And the Dodgers lead that series 2-0. Fun show today. Dan Dierdorf and Jim Brandsetter tomorrow, along with our Sunbury Broadcasting family of stations play-by-play announcers that will be calling the games for you on Friday night on Eagle 107, 100.9 The Valley, WMLP, and WKOK. That's all coming up on tomorrow's show. And, of course, Jack Ham, Derek Williams, Dick Girardi, all on Thursday's show. Today's show has been brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. For the outstanding Sean Carey, I'm Steve Jones. Thanks for joining us on News Radio 1070 WKOK, your home for Penn State Nittany Lion football.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.